Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John May.
And I'm Bob Retall.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top-selling comics and collected editions through Diamond to retailers for the year, as well as discussing some of the notable sales trends over the year. This is the year-end mail report for the trades for 2011. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about tons and tons and tons and tons of numbers, literally relating to tons and physical tons and physical tons of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, omnibuses, graphic novels, masterworks, archives, you name it, we got it. So we're covering all the stuff across the year, and it's lot of stuff. So obviously we're not going to talk about every number for every trade. You can't do that. So this year, for the year-end data, Diamond did not provide an index value like they did last year for the top comics and top trades list. So what I had to do, and I've had to do this in the past, so I already had a number crunching system for this, which is good because I didn't have time to write a new one for that. But I took the total known sales for each item over the year from the top 300 trades list, use that to calculate the minimum number of estimated units for each item on the list. So as a result, the list stair steps in a really kind of funny manner, which is really reflective of what data was and wasn't available in the monthly lists. Because depending where the bottom of the list is each month, you know, something could have sold a significant number of units over the course of the year and never have been on the monthly list. You know, the way that actually works out for 2011 is it could have had a total of 3,919 units having just missed the list every month, and obviously could do fairly decently, you know, at the end of the year. Now, would it be a top-ranking item? No. But it actually could have come in within the top 154 or so items out of a list of 1,000. So there's a lot of things that could have had a significant amount of activity, again, that we just wouldn't have seen on the monthly stuff. So this year-end data is more of kind of a ballpark set of numbers in terms of the top 1,000 and the further on list, which we'll get to in a little bit, versus the more solid monthly estimates that I have that are based on those order indexes. And with the order indexes, as we've talked about a number of times on the list, is basically each month they set a benchmark item. Usually it's Batman. Everything is kind of reflective of a percentage of that. It sold 100% of Batman, or 50%, or 200%, or whatever. And with that, once you kind of unlock that list for that value of X, you just do the multiplication. It's pretty easy to figure it out. But there's some, it's an oversimplification, but that's kind of how it works. Whereas this year-end list, we don't have that guideline. So all we know is the top-ranked item sold more than the second-ranked item, but just from the data provided by Diamond, we have no idea by how much. Now, in this case, because I've been able to kind of do what I said of, well, this is how much was reported, therefore, you know, since we can add up the sales for the first volume of The Walking Dead trade paperback, which is the top-ranked item for the year, and we know that the total reported estimated units was 34,656 units, well, it must have sold at least that much. Now, it could have sold way more than that. We just don't know from the data available. So does that kind of make sense?
Makes sense to me, John. Very good explanation.
Now, again, this is a once-a-year report from Diamond, so not too surprising that they change it up a little each year, mm-hmm. Depending who's doing it and if they can find the stuff from last year. But looking at this list of the top 1,000 trades for the year, we talked about this on the December stuff, tons and tons of Walking Dead. Just a staggering amount of Walking Dead. If it can be printed in you know, any format, Walking Dead is. It had between Walking Dead, the Compendium, the Survivor's Guide,
the covers, everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's got everything.
It had 24 items on the list and accounted for, at least as near as I can ballpark it, 265,000 units across all of that over the year. So well over.
I think I'm the only person in America that does not own any Walking Dead in the house.
Really? I mean, there's a ton of it out
there. I know.
There.
I better get on it before it sells out.
So
it's been an extraordinary year for the property.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing with, you know, the TV show, and you know, not only is it getting reprinted in hardcover and compendiums and omnibus deluxe slipcase editions for $125, whatever it is, but you know, the digital sales too, which we're not going to go into because we don't really have solid numbers on that, but it is available, and I can only imagine that it is selling well in digital format.
Again, it sold well in every format it's been put in, so I'd be shocked if it didn't do well digitally.
Right.
Now, another one that's a fairly solid property is Fables. Its top-ranked item on the list was at rank 6 for the year, with volume 15 of the trade paperback, doing somewhere in the ballpark of around 17,000 units. So I have it at 17,058 units, but again, this is a ballpark kind of a number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, can't really narrow it down any further from that. But that's just the top item for that. It too had quite a few items on the list. It had 18 items on the list compared to, what did I say, 24 for Walking Dead. But let's face it, Fables doesn't have quite as many variant formats as Walking Dead does. It's mainly just the trade paperbacks, every volume of that, and then two of the hardcovers. And this did somewhere around 90,000 units between all of those over the course of the year. So again, very strong property, but you know, big difference between how it's doing and how Walking Dead is doing. I attribute that as much to most of this being just the trade paperbacks for Fables, whereas Walking Dead had the compendiums, the omnibus, the, you know, this, that, and the other version. So I mean, Kirkman's turned double dipping into a fine art with Walking Dead. And man, why the hell shouldn't he? I mean, geez.
Right.
One of the things I found really interesting in the top 10 was the first trade paperback for Morning Glories.
Yeah.
It rounded out the top 10 with somewhere in the ballpark of 13,778 units. Now, to see, you know, Walking Dead show up on the top 10 for the year, not a surprise. Fables, not a surprise. We had that Batman Noel Deluxe Edition hardcover at rank 7, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 3 Century, you know, from top shelf in the third slot. None of those are surprises. But for something like Morning Glories, which I think is a great book, there are times that I know that I'm not getting quite all of what's in it just because I can't remember what happened from the previous issues or whatever. Very impressive. You know, I had an email exchange recently after Bob and I had reviewed it on the Weekly Comic Spotlight with a listener who, frankly, was kind of surprised by our reviews and how much we were glowing about it, and he thought it was a little, you know, derivative of Lost and really kind of took it to task. And it was interesting because he had some very valid points in his review, and, you know, it has me wanting to reread that series kind of from start to where it's at now in a single sitting, to see how it reads that way, because I think, and you know, I'm sure we've talked about this a couple of times before, when you read something in a monthly installment, it reads very differently than if you read it, you know, issue to issue to issue, just one after another, because you can get some more story momentum if you read it as if it were a collected edition, whether it's physically collected or not, or you just have the issues stacked up, versus parceling that out over a significant amount of time where it's had, you know, time for aspects of it to fade in your memory, or for you to actually think about it and say, ooh, I think this is what they're going to do, and maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Neither's a better or worse experience. They're just kind of different. But again, Morning Glories, I really would not have expected that to be in the top 10 for you the year.
I read the first issue, and I didn't go back to it for whatever reason, but now, you know, this is one of those titles kind of like Chew, where you want to go back and see what you missed, almost, yeah. You know?
Well, and Nick Spencer is a very talented writer. He's doing some great stuff over at Marvel. He's done some great stuff at DC.
He's doing Thunder Agents right now at DC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very, very solid writer. And this, I think, you know, he's been able to keep that going despite doing, you know, Marvel and DC work, which shows a passion for this. And I think this may long-term be kind of his Walking Dead, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
The property he really becomes known for. And the artist on it is doing a great job. It's been consistent, very, you know, top-notch art, and again, coming out on a regular basis. So definitely something I'd recommend. And while I wouldn't have expected it to be in the top 10, I can totally understand how it got there.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to good word of mouth, too. You know, another one like that comes down at rank 18, where we've got the first volume of Chew, doing somewhere around 10,627 units, you know, so... There are certain things that just kind of catch on and do well. Now, it's interesting that we only had two items in the year do over the 30,000 mark, as far as I can tell. Both of those were Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Another three doing over 20,000, which was the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and two other volumes of Walking Dead. And again, we're seeing kind of that V formation that we've seen before with the Walking Dead trades.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got, you know, up near the top, 1 and 14, and the next 15 and 2, and then 3 and 13, you know, and kind of people are either getting the most recent version or they're starting at the beginning. It's trailing off till the middle and then picking up towards the more recent. It's a very interesting kind of a sales trend, and it's a rough. It's not a perfect V or anything, but
mm-hmm.
I always find that kind of fascinating. But we're down below 10,000 by the time we get to rank 23 on this list. You know, and again, these are ballparks, so maybe rank 23 was above 10,000, but it's right around there.
Right.
And rank 23 was the new Teen Titans Games hardcover. You know, I've got it placed somewhere around 9,939 units. We've got actually 9,531 units that actually placed on the list over the year. So I'm thinking about 400, you know, had to be sold for this to have done better than Walking Dead Volume 10 trade paperback, which is the next item down on the list, which, of course, did the 9,939 units, which is how I know it must have done that much or better. It's also exciting. But
That's a book that's still getting reorder activity these days, too. That's a good property. You know, that's a good book that finally didn't this book originally supposed to come out years ago too?
Oh, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, like 20 years ago. So.
And, you know, for Wolfman and Perez to have stuck with it over the years on and off whatever. Yeah, I'm glad they did. I really mm-hmm. enjoyed it. It really made me, you know, want to kind of go back to that era of Titans. Now, of mm-hmm. course that era is long since over and done.
Oh, yeah.
But they captured what worked. Kept the characters true to themselves, yet were able to maintain a more modern story sensibility. So it was a very, very well done book. And of course, George Perez art, hard to go wrong with that.
That's true, yeah.
Now, the top 1,000 at the bottom of that, you know, I've got that Dark Tower Fall of Gilead or whatever, a premier hardcover doing 781 units. On the list over the year that I can place, yet that next item above it, the team-ups of the Brave and the Bold from DC, that trade paperback, did 1,424 units. Now, I'm not saying there's a 2-to-1 difference between rank 999 and 1,000, but that's the kind of odd stair-stepping we get when we don't have the index point value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because we have the index point value across the year to be able to kind of lock in on where certain things had to be. If we look at how that top 1,000 kind of splits out, just a hair over, a third of it went to DC. 300 items were from Marvel, 103 from Dark Horse, 68 from Image, 32 from Viz, 24 from IDW, and then from there it kind of drops off a bit. So definite, you know, smattering across the publishers and stuff. I did not do statistics for, you know, what percentage of units went to each of these publishers because the data is just not accurate enough to do that. It would mm-hmm. be far too misleading. We had just a number of different titles on the list this time. I counted around 666 different ones. But some of that is, again, the usual case of it may really be the same thing, but because they're inconsistent with how they title it from month to month, sometimes it shows up as a duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if there are any other things on the top 1,000 that was really surprising.
Can we talk about Marvel?
Sure. Do we have to? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we kind of have to. Just because, you know, I'm looking at the top 10, I'm looking at the top 20, I'm looking at the top 30.
They had one in the top 50.
You have to go to 49. And this is my little breakdown that I kind of have here, John. So if you just bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've got it at rank 49 with an estimated 6,286 units of Kick-Ass. And then after that, you know, these are all just the trade periods. What I'm kind of trying to get at is, you know, after that at 54, we've got Old Man Logan. I don't want to really go over the numbers. I just want to do the rank real quick. Civil War trade paperback coming at 64. Then we get to the first hardcover from Marvel, which is the Richard Castle Deadly Storm premiere hardcover. It ranks 71 with 5,677 units.
That's how many placed on the monthly list over the year.
Yeah.
I'm estimating it did around 6,000.
Probably, yeah. And it's probably doing even better in a Barnes & Noble store.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the book's store numbers. But you know, keep going along with that. You know, with rank 75, we have Nemesis, which is still really not a Marvel. It's on that Icon line that we like to talk about. And that's a premier hardcover. And then after that, at rank 87, we've got Uncanny X-Force Volume 1, which is still a trade paperback, mind you. And you have to go all the way down to rank 218 for a Marvel hero property in hardcover. And that is FF by Jonathan Hickman. Premier hardcover coming in at with 2,685 units. I find that fascinating. That is the hero line of books from Marvel coming in at a brand new, spanking fresh hardcover.
Yeah,
you know,
that is surprising.
It's, you know, that far down the list, and up before that, we've got so many DC properties. You know, with all the Batman titles and everything going on, and Brightest Day and everything. So I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
It is interesting because, again, you look at the DC stuff. You start with that Batman Noel, but that's kind of an odd beast because it was original to hardcover, as was the Titans Games. But even when you get things like Killing Joke, The Return of Bruce Wayne, Arkham City, all of those are clear Batman titles doing fairly well up within the top 50. Flashpoint failed to get into the top 50, but it was at rank 52.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that Brightest Day, and it's doing pretty well. You know, Superman Earth 1 continues to do pretty well. It did somewhere around, you know, again, 6,400 units, beating out that Castle, Richard Castle's Deadly Storm. And the fact that Castle hardcover is the best-selling hardcover for Marvel says a lot.
Yeah.
This is part of why I was saying on the December episode, maybe they shouldn't just collect everything.
Right.
Because a lot of what they have here, you know, further down the list, we've got things like the Thanos Imperative, X-Men Schism, Secret Avengers Mission to Mars. You know, a lot of these are fine stories. I enjoyed them. But do they have to be collected and traded and whatever? They've cluttered the market. The fact that there are, you know, the 1,000 things. I mean, DC, or not DC, Diamond released the top 500. And I emailed saying, last year you did more. Is this all? And then, here's 1,000. It's like, okay, awesome, great. And I really like the fact that Diamond is very giving with their data at times. Now, mm-hmm. sometimes not so much. There's some data they cannot, will not, and should not give out. I basically told them, hey, anything you're going to release publicly, I'd like. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes. But my point here is, you know, when you get just to that top 500 and filter that down to Marvel, how many items do we wind up with on that? We wind up with 29 hardcovers. Let me go ahead and expand that out to pretty much everything, and we get actually quite a bit more at that point. 117.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is mid-list stuff. You know, you go down below that, it's even further mid-list stuff. And one of the things I thought about commenting on in our December episode was, you know, how with the events and stuff like that, there's particularly with the Marvel versus X or the Avengers versus X-Men stuff over at Marvel, they've got that one secondary mini series or maxi series, whatever you want to call it, that seems to be nothing but a slugfest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to put Rogue and Miss Marvel, and they're going to punch it out.
Right.
It reeks of the 90s. You know, and in all of the wrong ways. I really don't think right now Marvel is on a creative upswing. I think the current editorial regime under Axel Alonso, isn't it? I'm wondering if they may have lost their way for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing more of the same. I know with Bob, a lot of it's not hitting home with him. He's not in favor of what a lot of the architects are doing on a lot of their books. He's backing out of a lot of things. And I
even Bendis announced his quote unquote retirement. You know,
yeah,
he's getting out.
So I think there's a just like DC did a major shakeup in 2011 with the New 52 that we're going to see reflected on the trade side in 2012. I have to wonder if it's time for Marvel to do the same thing, and if we may see that as an outcome of the X-Men versus Avengers stuff, or Avengers mm-hmm. versus X-Men, or whatever, whichever one you want to give top billing. And I'm sure they'll duke it out to get there. Yeah, it's a far cry from when, you know, Avengers was the clear top franchise and stuff like that. But again, let's go back to 2011 started out very, very weakly. You know, it was a lackluster January. It wasn't a whole lot better in February. The only reason there was an item in February on the comic side that was selling over, you know, I think it was like 70 or 80,000 was because they killed off Johnny Storm for a bit.
Right.
You know, but...
And we all knew he'd be back for 600, you know.
And lo and behold...
And lo and behold...
There he was.
Yeah.
You know, so... The fact that some of these things really kind of, you know, the hardcovers, there were a lot of other things before we get down to, again, that one at rank 218 with the FF by Hickman and the hardcover,
mm-hmm.
I think is a reflection of weaker material as far as the mass readership and retailership is concerned. And also, I think they've been shifting a little bit away from the hardcover mentality. I think they're going more for the trades, trying to keep the price point down and being a little bit more consumer friendly in that respect.
So, yeah, I think you're right. You know, I mean, you know, I think if anything, in 2011, DC proved that they can shake up everything and come out a success. You know, it really didn't backfire. You know, I remember all the critics were like, what is going to happen? You know, half these titles are going to suck. They're all going to fold. Where is our universe? And, you know, for the most part, they've done pretty well. You know, and well, I've been enjoying a lot of their titles too.
Let's think of the three big moves DC made for 2011. Drawing the line at 299.
Right.
They did that before the year started. They stuck with that all year on their regular titles, 32-page titles, with the 20 pages of story, just like they said they would. They were true to their word on that. They're still continuing that with no end in sight.
Mm-hmm.
The New 52, huge risk. I was certainly, you know, apprehensive about it. Will it work? Will I like it? Will it not? And frankly, the jury's still out for me on some of these titles.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
sure.
If I were at the point I was at a couple of years back where, you know, at Thanksgiving about 3 years ago, the company I was working at just went under. You know, if that were happening to me, if the New 52 had just launched at that point, that would have been such an easy out for the DC universe for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I might never have looked back. You know, so it's a risky endeavor. It's been paying off so far. The question is, can they maintain that or not? And when we get to the month-to-month sales, there's a you know, a point, I guess I did that in my CBR article, looking further back than just this year, but there was a point around 2005, 2006 where DC was on a similar upswing and quickly squandered it. So it's not a guaranteed thing. But those are two of the three big moves. The other big move DC made, line-wide digital for their superhero line.
Right.
And all three of those are game changers. Now, how it changes the game in some cases are still, you know, unclear. But, I mean, those were major moves by DC. The question I would have for you and for all of our listeners, what moves like that did Marvel do?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they reacted to a number of them. You know, the whole, oh, we're going to give away the free digital copy with the Ultimate Universe. Well, that's a day late, dollar short, or dollar extra, actually. I'm not seeing Marvel really take the risks, take the chances, shake things up, and try to do, you know, the impressive kinds of dangerous moves that DC has done. You know, and I certainly don't see the Avengers versus X-Men as part of anything like that. I think that's a, well, let's try another event and see how that works.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of least common denominator programming, in my opinion. But yeah, it is interesting that, you know, a lot of their higher selling collected editions are creator owned properties, the best selling author properties like Dark Tower, Gunslinger, Journey Begins, you know, things of that nature versus their bread and butter titles.
Mm-hmm. And it seems also, you know, DC's got their Vertigo line, and those tend to sell better in the collected edition form. I mean, that's no surprise with Fables and you know, over the years, Why the Last Man and everything like that. So that's not a surprise. And therefore, it's not a surprise to see the Icon line doing well in a graphic novel or collected edition form either.
I think it's
kind of going on a similar path, and hopefully Marvel will expand that out.
Well, I was going to say it'll be surprising if it continues.
Okay.
Because now that they're under Disney, you know, I wonder if they're going to be as able to be as supportive of creator-owned material. I'm not saying they won't be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It is a risk. I think it would behoove them to do that, and it should be something where they can get some of the top-name talents in the industry and use that as a, hey, well, you're writing half our lineup. You can also do your little creator-owned thing and get, you know, scratch that creative itch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no reason that Hickman should be feeling the need to go do Red Wing over at Image if Marvel was really taking care of him.
Right.
That's something they should see as a negotiating tactic versus anything else. So let's go ahead and move on to the next sheet of the workbook.
Sure.
Which is remarkably similar. It's the top trades for the year, but it's the full list. As if 1,000 items was not enough. And I'm a data junkie. It's never enough.
Right.
In addition to providing the top trades and stuff, Diamond also provided a couple of other lists, as they've been doing on the monthly side, too, although I haven't really been able to integrate that into my regular number crunching for a couple of reasons. But they give, you know, here's the top apparel, the top books, magazines, posters, trading cards, videos, games. The interesting categories are manga, small comics, small graphic novels, indie graphic novels, and yeah, those are the main ones.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, and particularly with this one, Marvel and DC crowd a lot of publishers out of the list. So the small and the indie lists just simply don't include them. And what that means is below the top 1,000, if we scroll all the way down on this page to that 1,000 mark, we see the list continue. But it jumps to rank 1,004 with Smurfs Volume 5. Well, there are going to be some gaps at this point in the list. Sometimes a couple of ranks, sometimes a lot of ranks. But it's going to go cover things by NBM, Dynamite, Viz, Cartoon Books, Scholastic, Boom, Arcana, Dynamite. You know, all of those other publishers that, again, Marvel and DC tend to squeeze out. But at this point, we lose visibility into the Marvel, DC, and some of these other publishers. I think Dark Horse, Image, and IDW Fallout 2. I'm not positive on that. I didn't look close enough. But it allows us to get a lot further down on the list, because over the course of this additional 132 items, we wind up going down to rank 2210. So we get down to, you know, again, the Grimm Fairy Tales and stuff. We get stuff that, as far as I can tell, was selling around under 300 units over the course of the year, and start to see how some of these rank up and stuff. And I find this very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The monthly number crunching system I've got is, the way I've got the spreadsheet worked out, fits 100 rows, or 300 rows for the comics, 300 for the trades. I don't really have it set up to where it's easy to do a variable length of the list for a couple of reasons, and that's part of one of the goals I have for the revamped number crunching I hope to find time to finish, is to allow me to include as much data as they've got. Part of the challenge for that is not just, well, we need more rows in the spreadsheet, it's when do I include those in certain calculations, when do I not? Part of why I had that first tab we looked at of the top 1,000 trades for the year, so we could do aggregates of just the top 1,000. Because obviously, once we go below that, Marvel and DC and those publishers drop out, if we were to include those on the percentages, it unfairly skews the numbers. Because their data is just not included. And it's interesting that, you know, some of the stuff we're seeing here. We're seeing, you know, things like The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck Volume 2 hardcovers moving almost 800 units and stuff. These are things that, in a lot of cases, fell completely under the radar
mm-hmm.
of the monthly lists. But because we know where it stacked up versus other things that we do, you know, have placed on the monthly list, we can get some ideas on how it sold.
Well, a lot of this stuff just gets lost in the big previews phone book that nobody reads, you know, and that's a shame because, you know, you and I recognize all these titles because we go through them and we, you know, dissect the list as it is. So, you know, it's not hard to see a book like, you know, Death Note or Grim Fairy Tales or anything like that. And, you know, and if people out there listening, listen to other people's podcasts and read, you know, the smart blogs out there that talk about these books at the bottom of the list, and they would know that, like, the 21 story of Roberto Clemente from Fantagraphics is a fantastic book, and they should pick a book like that up, even though it's sold, you know, according to the data, under 1,000 units, you know? And that book, I mentioned that book, John, because I have that in my top 10 of the year.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's that good. You know, my love of comics and my love of baseball come together.
We talk every month, and that one never really hit my radar.
Yep, it's fantastic.
It's easy for that to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob and I recently reviewed the one-shot comic for Brody's Ghost, and the digest that Mark Crilly's been doing for those had missed Bob's radar. He's, you know, since ordered the first two.
Mm-hmm.
I think he found them on, I found them for him on Amazon or whatever. But it comes down to there's such great stuff coming out across the industry that no matter what your tastes are, artistically, storytelling-wise, genre-wise, there is something out there for you. Now, maybe it's not selling worth beans overall,
mm-hmm.
but let's face it, a lot of this doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things here that may only be selling 1,000 or two over the course of the year, but, you know, if the creators and publishers can make a go at it that way, awesome. I'm perfectly fine with the realization that some of the entertainment I want is strictly niche material.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect it to appeal to you know, millions and millions of people, but if they can make a go at it targeting to my specific esoteric tastes of, I want a comic book that's got Power Ranger type stuff, awesome, you know?
Well, and this really, you know, really points in the direction of two things. One, you've got to shop. You've got to, even though if you buy online, you got to go to a store, and hopefully you go to a store that has a somewhat intelligent store owner that can recommend things to you that is on top of the industry and not just pushing out the next Avengers title to you.
I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again now. That's about Joe, who used to work at Comic Gallery in Mira Mesa, California.
Uh-huh.
That store was the one I'd been shopping at for a while. Joe started working there, and he was you know, out of college age or whatever, young, okay, compared to me by probably at least 10 years at the time. About 10 years, it sounds about right. Maybe not. Anyways, it's one of those things that, you know, I've been around the block in terms of reading the comics. I'd been through Crisis and a number of other things. I knew what I liked. I knew what I didn't like, or so I thought.
Right.
And typically,
or so you thought, right.
That's the key.
Right.
Because typically I'd go to a comic shop. Oh, what do you recommend? Oh, well, you should read that. Oh, I've got the whole run. You should read this. I've got the whole run. You should read this. I tried it, didn't like it.
Right.
And that would be the extent of what anyone could offer. For I don't remember how long. Frankly, it seemed like forever. Every week I would go in, Joe would say, you know, there's this thing. It's called Duncan's Kingdom. I think you might like it. Try it out. Liked it. Granted, it was a two-issue series, but hey, there were two great issues. Mm-hmm. There was, what was Xander's Canyon? Replacement Gods and Other Tales. Got hooked on that. Got hooked on Pantheon by Bill Williams, or Bill Willingham. Mm-hmm. Bill Williams was the publisher through Lone Star Press or whatever. It was kind of a event series minus the universe. You just come in for the event kind of a deal. Mm. And on a routine basis, he was able to kind of figure out what I would like, and rarely was he ever wrong. And it's basically a really good comic book shop employee, and I don't think it needs to be the owner. It's almost better if it's not.
Yeah.
Sometimes. They need to act like a personal shopper for you.
Right.
This is what we've got. This is what you would like. Oh, you like the manga. You like this. You like the superheroes. You like the obscure indies. You like the hard-boiled noir type stuff. Have I got a book for you? Comics Pro is in a position, I think, to coordinate the and foster the growing of that skill set across comic book store employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just have there's got to be a way to build some kind of a, if you've gotten this, and if for a customer who reads X, if they're reading it because of character, creator, art, plot, genre, lettering or whatever, recommend them this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
If that works, then try this. If this doesn't work, try that. You know, some kind of a decision process.
And they have to be careful because there's only so much money a customer can spend before, you know, and then if you make the wrong choices, you know, he's not going to want any recommendations from you.
You're almost better off not making a choice than just throwing a book at him.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things Joe did is I would be hard-pressed to name any time he recommended two books in a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he asked what I thought, what I liked, what I didn't like. He listened, and he tailored accordingly.
Right.
You know, he was a brilliant comic book shop employee. He was a great guy. That was one of my favorite times of reading comics because, I mean, there was great stuff being published that I was already getting, and I have never had a small pull list. I think people who listen to the podcast have gathered that. That was one of the times where my pull list was growing, but not out of control. It wasn't, gee, can we suck every dollar out of John's wallet? It's a, he will like this, let's see if we can add it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, some of these rotated in and out. Some of them shipped once in a blue moon, you know? But it kept me interested, it kept me engaged, it kept me excited about comics, you know? And I look at this list of trades and hardcovers and graphic novels and stuff, and I just see such a variety of age ranges, genres, and interests that are covered by this that, you know, anytime I hear somebody, and I've had a couple of people who were, oh, well, you read comics kind of a thing. You know, if you're dismissing it, it's like dismissing television. And
right.
I actually know somebody at work who, I don't watch TV. They think it's either beneath them, a waste of their time, whatever. And maybe it is, you know, different things for different people.
Right.
But, you know, the storytelling stuff that's happening in comics these days is really great. And then again, I look at some of these sales and it's like, you know, they could be doing better.
Well, that goes to my second point. I'm probably preaching to the choir for a lot of our listeners, but I think that, you know, you do have to go pick up a previews magazine every once in a while and thumb through it, and really you do get a pulse on what's getting published these days.
It would
and
be
you may find something you like.
Interesting, and I don't know who would be the right group to do this, but the previews is pretty overwhelming and, frankly, pretty ineffective. You've got an image and about three or four sentences, a short paragraph,
right,
to sell something on somebody on something. Now, sometimes you get a couple of pages of art with like an image book, whatever. Sometimes you get literally a sentence and a postage stamp image. And they're selling individual issues. I would like to see something, maybe it comes out every quarter. Here are the titles that are out there. You know, Batman is out there. If you like this kind of a story, you should be reading Batman. But if you like this kind, you should read Detective.
Right.
Or if you want him teaming up with Robin or this kind of an angle on it, go for this. To differentiate the titles, to give not so much the pitch, the premise, the, oh, Batman was, you know, an Avenger of the night, parents died, yada, yada. Not to recap the origin, but to help you identify, is this right for you or not?
Well, that, you know, look how many Avengers titles there are. Look how the X-Men titles these days, you know, you do get confused, you know.
Why should somebody read Captain America versus Captain America and Bucky? Why should somebody read Uncanny X-Men versus X-Men Legacy versus Astonishing X-Men versus
Wolverine,
X-Men, or Wolverine X-Men. And the X-Men? Yeah, you know, whichever titles there are today.
Mm-hmm.
I think if those kinds of issues were solved, we'd be looking at a much higher total on these lists.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't think it's for a lack of quality content. It's a lack of matching that content up with the people who would consider it quality content. All right, so we've got a bunch of stuff here. I did the same basic breakdown by publishers and stuff. Obviously, the publishers for Marvel and DC had the same number of items because of the aforementioned. They get cut off at 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
The actual, you know, how many units and stuff they sold, same basic odd stair-stepping issue we hit before. So I don't want to go too much into that. We go for quite a range where it's, oh, all of these sold roughly the same for, you know, a few dozen items. It's like, well, no, there was obviously a lot more delineation in there. We just can't see it from the data we've got. I've got a rough notion of how I might be able to glean a little more information from this, but I haven't been able to work through the kinks of it and turn it into a reality yet, so we'll just leave it at that. On the next page, we've got the top trades by title. This is just the summary of the data for each title. Again, this year it's kind of a questionable use because of that lack of an index point value from Diamond. I cannot stress enough how useful I find that one data element. 'Cause, I mean, like we saw with the December numbers, the difference between rank run and 1 and 2 was about a doubling. Between 2 and 3, it was, again, a doubling or a halving, depending which way you're going down, up or down the list. And the list we got from Marvel this time around, from Diamond, was just a ranked list with no indication of, you know, is it a minor difference or a major difference as we go down from ranking to ranking. On the next tab, I've got the trades by format. I've broken it out by absolute, by archives, collected edition, all that kind of stuff. This is subject to whatever magic keywords do and don't get used in the way Diamond lists the items. We had 3 absolutes, 15 archives, 32 graphic novels, 14 hardcovers. Let's see, it says 48 trades. That seems a wee bit off because I'm only seeing a total of 158 items on this.
Yeah.
So we'll consider this to be highly questionable this year because I apparently goofed when I put that one together. That's again, part of why I'm fairly forgiving with Diamond for the year-end stuff, shifting the format every year, it seems like. Because I have a hell of a time finding, where did I put the queries I used last year? Which one did I use for which page? I'm hoping at some point to automate this and get this to where it's actually part of the monthly process and does the rolling last 12 months.
Well, I know we had more than 10 Masterworks.
Oh, yeah.
And you have 15 archives, but we're not talking DC archives. That's archives across the board.
Yeah.
So that's a little skewed, too. Yeah,
no, that's totally hosed. I can tell that just off a glance. I just didn't catch that when I was putting out the numbers usually. I know. Well, the time between when I got the data and when I finished the crunching was less than 12 hours, including spending all day at work.
Ugh.
So, not trying to make excuses, but I'm trying to get the data out faster, but that gives me less time to actually, you know, sanity check some of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you one thing, just glancing at this, and I just know because I follow it so intently, because that's what I do. I know that in 2011, we had a lot more of the oversized books than we did in 2010.
Got that impression.
Yeah, it really tailed off, didn't it? And then it kind of revved back up this year.
It seemed like, I mean, obviously you get the things like the Absolutes, the Omnibuses that are just gargantuan. But it seemed like they've been fiddling around with the trim size on the hardcovers and the trades, frankly, a lot more than I think they should.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I were publishing, I wouldn't even fiddle that much with the trade dress.
Right.
I would want things to look very uniform, very consistent, because I think that visually is appealing. I mean, I've got two items here from Watson Guptill that are books, not trades, but they're the Stanley How to Draw Comics, How to Write Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom, where you've got the publisher thing on the spine, the area that's red with the Watson Guptill or whatever is different heights. The Stan Lees don't line up quite right. The How to Write Comics has a black part kind of behind it, whereas the How to Draw Comics has white.
Mm-hmm.
It's inconsistent. It looks, I don't want to say amateurish, because it looks, it's obviously professional. It's inconsistent.
Right.
You know, whereas I look over at my Handbooks of the Marvel Universe hardcovers, all of them look perfectly consistent. It's like it's an encyclopedia set.
Right.
You know, it looks professional. It looks consistent. It looks nice. I really think they... they don't give enough credit to that when they keep
the
tweaking
design,
the trade dress and stuff. And certainly it gets compounded when you actually change the physical size of the books.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Now, the next page I've got here is the monthly top trades data. And this is just a compilation of the top 300 trades from the 12 months of the year. So there's the 3,600 items on this. So something that got reordered multiple times, like, say, the first volume of 100 Bullets, which is here near the top, we see each time it hit the list every month.
Oh, okay.
Now, the estimates here are based on the index value, so they're as accurate as the monthly data is. But do keep in mind, and I want to remind everybody of this, these are estimates, okay? Now, I add more data into the system every month. I recrunch all the data every month. So the numbers I've got here might be a little bit different than what I had published back in January or February or March or whatever. Just because, again, I'm trying to hone the estimates and all that kind of stuff. But all of this data is well within the margin of error for the data set. Now, for 2011, that average margin of error, I did a quick, you know, calculation on that, and I don't think I screwed it up. But if I'm right... You know, hey, I make mistakes. But it's really within about plus or minus 5 units for everything. Most of the year, that margin of error from like January down to, I think, about August was about plus or minus 3 units. Because really, as a gross oversimplification of the process, you know, the margin of error is really limited by the index point value, which goes to 2 decimal places. And the value is based on the 100% for Batman. So divide it by the 100, figure half that's going to be right up, half that's going to be right down, so divide by 2, and essentially you get that margin of error. But it's a factor based on the index point value. In other words, what does that 1.00 diamond order index equate to? Beginning of the year, it was around 600. It drifted down over the months to about 518, we'll say, in August. But then, new 52, new Batman, totally skews the index. It shoots up to about 1,884. It's been kind of drifting down since then.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, the margin of error was closer to about 9, plus or minus. So if I said something was 100 units, well, it could have been 91, could have been 109. It's
ballpark, right?
Well, not ballpark. It's an estimate, literally.
Right.
When I say a ballpark, I'm talking the year-end stuff, where it could be off by hundreds of thousands or way more. You know, we're literally in the ballpark with that stair-stepping stuff, whereas this, pretty accurate.
Yeah.
You know? And again, it's math. So, if you understand math, you're golden. If not, well, math can be hard. I'll admit that. All of this is data we've been looking at every month. I don't know that there's really anything too exciting about this. But it's one of those where you can see how, you know, old man Logan showed up, you know, let's see, how many times? 11 times.
Your All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
Or volume 1 and volume 2, though, I should say.
Well, you know, you got Watchmen every month.
Yeah,
of the
every
year.
Month, yeah.
It happens, you know, as it should. So this is something that I mainly include here just for reference to where it's like, well, this was the page I was using when you were asking in the December episode.
Okay, sure.
Well, how did this do? It's like, okay, fine. Let me go find that volume of Fables. Oh, it came out in this month. Let me filter by month. Let me go filter the rankings to 1 and 2. Boom, here's how it did. It's not quite a pivot table because I was too lazy to put one together, but it served the same purpose.
Right.
Let's see. What else do we got here? So that's pretty much what we got on that page.
Okay.
The next one we've got, and this is the one I found really interesting myself, is the top trades by month. Now this is taking a month. It's doing a monthly breakdown of the top 300 trades each month, and how many items for DC, Marvel, and other. What were the unit shares? All that kind of stuff. And then I kind of put a couple of charts together on this page, which I think shows some interesting stuff. If we look at that units chart, which obviously you can see, but the listeners not so much, really what we see over the year is a slight but steady kind of an upward trajectory, both in units and dollars for trades over the year. You know, more so on the dollars chart than on the units, but it went from a little under a quarter million units to... At one point, it was getting close to 350,000 units, but it was and it ended up a little under the 300,000 unit mark. But again, it had that more uphill velocity than we've seen in some years. And again,
why the dip in October?
Why the dip in October?
Remember that? What? I mean, I'm looking at the...
If we were to go back a page and filter for the month to October...
Yeah.
And again, that's why I put that one in there. Anyone who thinks I can recite this just off the top of my head is nuts.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but...
No, it's a fair question.
You know, just glancing at it, you see the units are... It's a steady incline, and then on the units and the dollars... and then October, it just kind of dips. And also,
let's see, the top-selling item was only 5,600 units or thereabouts, so it didn't have a really strong top of the list.
Right.
And I think that can account for a lot. So I think it was just more a matter of, quick glance, I'd have to go back and really look at that data.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it, but yeah. It's just noticeable within the charts, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. But it's one of those things that you can see kind of those peaks and valleys and stuff.
Right.
What's interesting is if you then take that and split it by publisher, by which I mean, of course, DC, Marvel, and everyone else, those charts get those lines get very interesting because for the first 5 months, the other is doing okay between the 100 and 120,000. But then in June, it shoots up to about 160,000, 170,000.
Right.
And then fluctuates between, we'll say, 140 and 160 or so for the remainder of the year. So it's like in June, it just kicked it up a notch. And at that same time, you know, we're seeing both Marvel and DC kind of duking it out in the same general area, in that 60 to 80 to 90,000 range, kind of arcing upwards a little bit over the first half of the year, but not too much, and then starting to arc downwards quite a bit over the last half. With Marvel going from around 100,000 in July to under about 60,000 in December, and then we see a noticeable... I mean, we were seeing a drop-off with DC up through about October, but then in November it shoots up to the 100,000 mark and then kind of drifts down under the 80 in December. So it's clear that, you know, you're more likely to have, let me rephrase this. I don't say you're more likely to have success in the trades if you're an indie publisher, but it's, I think it's a more level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very uphill battle to make a dent in the comics stuff on the monthly side if you're indie, i.e. non-Marvel DC. And again, I'm including Image, Dark Horse. Let's be realistic. Prior to the New 52, there were some DC titles that were doing the 5,000 to 10,000 mark.
Oh, sure.
You know, and there's occasionally some Marvel ones doing that same area. You know, the fact that DC is ending some books at issue 8 that currently are selling in the 15 to 20,000 range means they're moving that line of death up from where it had drifted down.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand that. You know, if we look at the publishers by dollars, we see a very clear upward trend from around 5 million peaking above 7 million for the other publishers in November and then dropping down towards about 6. Whereas Marvel and DC were fluctuating, with DC at the low of around a little over a million in January, peaking in, November well above, we'll say about 2.5 million, going down to 2 million in December, so trending upwards. Marvel being a lot more level, being around the 1.5 to 2 million most of the year, drifting down towards that 1.5 million or whatever in the last quarter. So you can really see how the different areas trend differently. And I would say the dominant trend is really coming from the other publishers, not from Marvel and DC. So it's it really implies that the interest in the Marvel and DC trades is potentially cooling off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at that unit chart by publisher and, you know, it really seems like those other publishers are succeeding almost at the expense of Marvel and DC.
Well, especially at the expense of Marvel.
Yes.
You know, just looking at the, we just mentioned, you know, where they are placing with the new hardcovers and the top 200. And, you know, DC is definitely on the roll. You know, we'll see how they keep that up in the new year. But, yeah, Marvel is on the, just by looking at the chart, it's on decline. It may not be on paper and in monetary value, you know, but.
But creatively, they're not clicking with the readers as they
right.
were.
Right, exactly.
I'm expecting the Avengers to start wearing jackets again.
Maybe.
A bad reference to the 90s.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, again, I hear about the Avengers versus X-Men slugfest thing, and I'm like, really? But then again, I'm loving what's going on with Cap and Bucky and some of that stuff that Brubaker's doing. So I don't have the faith in their editorial regime that I would like to. Whereas at DC, while I think they have made, I don't want to say some missteps, but some things that I considered highly questionable when they were announced. OMAC, Hawk and Dove, particularly some of the creators they put on them, not specifically the takes they had on them.
Right.
So I'm not surprised those got canceled. But, you know, I have a much more positive outlook towards what DC is doing over the course of 2011. Whether I agreed with it or not, they are doing things. Not seeing that sense of leadership, ownership, and whatever from Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up a good kind of a good little point there that you're kind of verging on, and that is, you know, and this may be a discussion for an entirely different show, but, you know, DC cancels, 6 titles?
Yeah.
And they're going to bring on 6 new titles. Well, do they really need to do that? Do they need to replace the 6 with 6, or can they just replace with 4 or 2 or not replace at all? I mean, I know you've got to try new things and keep fresh, but
This comes down to one of the things that I thought personally was a mistake and I would not have done. I get why they did it.
Yeah.
But the new 52, if they had gone with the new DCU or something like that, or DCU 2.0 or what have you, and not tied themselves to 52, which frankly was a legacy of the title 52, because, well, they wanted to do a weekly title for a year. Let's call it 52. Oh, since we're calling it 52, we want to tie that into the story. Let's have 52 universes in the multiverse, yada, right. yada, yada. Because they did that, you can't have the new 52 with 50 titles.
Well, I think the new 52 is thrown out the window now. I think that was just for September, and then they brought on Penguin, and they brought on
I'm still saying New 52 on issue 5 of these books.
I know, so am I. And that's it's a branding thing, I know.
Yeah, it's a branding thing.
It is.
And I think it's actually, I mean, while I would not have done it, I do see and think it is smart for them to say, you know, 52 titles, that's about right.
Mm-hmm.
That's manageable. That's it's a baker's dozen books a week, so 13 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Yeah, but they're shipping more than that.
Well, not in the DC. Well, once you add the miniseries, you wind up with an extra book or two a week, so it's about 15.
Yeah.
But it's still a far cry from where it seemed like it was at one point, where there was like sometimes, you know, 20 books that were shipping. I mean, they at one point they had a lot of books. Not as Marvel many as Marvel. Shipping.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, Marvel's nuts.
They are nuts.
I mean, the double shipping is
saturation.
Is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to a couple of years ago be getting about 26 books a week. I'm now averaging closer to about 45. And yes, I've expanded my reading. More publishers have come. I've said, oh, that looks great, whatever. And I have a hard time saying, no, I admit this. But part of that is Marvel's cranking out a lot of stuff. I'm actually reading less DC because there's fewer DC to read.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, DC's a breeze to get through now.
I think that was a smart move when they consolidated their line.
Well, especially considering... You know, guys like me, I mean, you are, but guys like me are not getting all 13 titles every week. I'm getting, like, you know, three or four, you know.
Bob's pared back substantially.
Yeah.
You know, but it was in a controlled manner versus when Marvel's been cutting back at times. It's, well, you know, that eight-issue series that we shipped five issues of, well, it just ended.
Yeah, right.
Really? So glad I invested in those five issues.
Right.
That was, what was that? That was the All-Winter Squad or whatever? Band of Heroes.
Oh, you mean the 12? Yeah,
No. The Marvel series that ended after, five issues. It was the, All-Winter Squad or something like that.
That's awful.
I'm seeing if I can find it real quick in the list.
Because the 12.
Oh, I'm looking at the trade. Cover. That's why I'm not finding it. Duh, it'd be on the comic side. Never mind.
Nah, never mind. Don't look it up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with the 12 coming back, too, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, half these characters in the 12, or the Phantom, what is it? The Phantom Lady, she is in Avengers 1959.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. Yeah.
Well, and with some of these, by the time they continue the series, it's been long enough that the story momentum shot.
Right.
So, all in all, I think it was a very interesting year. I think it definitely ended up a lot stronger than it started, but it started very weak on the trade side and on the comic side, and very lackluster. There was no major events that were just, oh, everybody's excited about or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like some years where it's like, ooh, that big wave of trades is going to come. I mean, we got that with Flashpoint to a degree and some stuff like that. But it's not like when, you know, Civil War or Blackest Night or some of those were hitting. And I think going forward in 2012, the big thing we're going to look back on this time next year is going to be, how did that first wave, those volume ones of the new 52, how did those do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how are they going to collect things like these six that are ending with issue 8? Is it just going to be one trade?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. You know, and we mentioned in the December one about, you know, OMAC and Frankenstein crossing over, and OMAC's getting canceled, and, you know, how are they going to collect that extra issue if they are going to collect that crossover issue, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also, what's going to happen to some of these characters?
Yeah, exactly.
Is OMAC going to move over into Frankenstein?
It could be.
You know, or are we just not going to see Static ever again? Or,
yeah.
You know, how does
Static
that all play out?
The Teen Titans, where I, you know.
Or the Ravers or whatever is one of the
Ravengers.
Books,
or the Rav.
I thought it was the Ravers, but yeah,
Ravers.
Whatever.
Yeah, the Ravengers.
Yeah, give it
time. I'm thinking of the Reavers from the old X-Men title. Remember those guys?
Yes, yes. Again, back to the 90s.
Exactly. I love the 90s.
So, again, overall, it was a good year for the trades and stuff. It's going to be also interesting to see how the move to digital, if that has any impact on trade sales going forward, and if we're even going to be able to determine that or not. You know, because we're hitting the point where, certainly with DC, everything moving forward that's getting collected on the superhero line, available digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's yet another way they could say, you know, maybe we're not going to print collections of everything initially.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to wait till it actually warrants it. But we'll see how that goes. That's pretty much what I got. You got anything else?
No. I mean, overall, I think it was a fun year. I mean, yeah, we did start out kind of slow. But, you know, you and I track the trades. And, you know, you and Bob do the monthly. So I think you get a better gauge on the overall industry with the monthlies. But as far as the trades go, I think it was great. We had a lot of great classic material get reprinted and a lot of, you know, special projects coming out from a lot of different companies, which was great to see. And, yeah, I thought overall it was a pretty good year.
I would agree with that. There's still a couple of things that I'd like to see them get a little better on. I think they promise a few things and not deliver in terms of, we're going to collect this, or in some cases they announce a little too early, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
There were a couple of hardcovers or trades that I had ordered that got canceled and then resolicited, repackaged, whatever. That's a little frustrating, but those are the exceptions, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that we're getting to the point where a couple of years back, I was thinking trades were clearly the future of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That the monthly was going to go away, the trades were going to take over the lion's share of the income and just be the driving force for new content. Hasn't happened.
But digital might do
that. Digital might. It might not.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that right now is the potential, you know, new main revenue stream, but I think we're still a few years from that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's impossible for us to tell because we don't have those numbers, that data. But we're also hitting the point where there's going to be those unforeseen consequences of the digital format. I was seeing an article on Comic Book Resources today about how Geoff Johns is starting to rethink how he tells stories because people are digitally focusing on individual panels, not the overall page and stuff like
that. Sure, that's a big editorial decision they've got to figure out over there.
Think about how that would impact Francis Manapul over on The Flash. He's doing some very interesting stuff visually with the storytelling. Or J.H. Williams on Batwoman.
On Batwoman. The two-page spreads are incredible. Yeah.
But does it work digitally?
I mean, probably not. You know, I mean, every time when I read, I mean, I've got the 7-inch Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And every time a two-page spread comes up, I got to put it in landscape mode and then kind of blow it up with my fingers to read the captions. And then I can get a wonderful look at the art, but then you're really focusing on a certain, you know, part of the art, you know. And then you do have to kind of step back, and still on a 7-inch tablet, it's pretty small when you're looking at the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's partially my fault. I should have a 10-inch iPad, which I'm probably going to get the iPad 3 when it comes out. Whenever it comes out in 2011 or 2012. But yeah, I mean, that's just where we are right now with comics, you know.
But you look at how collected editions changed storytelling style.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later that's going to happen to comics because of the digital stuff. And that's going to, you know, impact how it sells, too.
Mm-hmm.
How it impacts how it sells, don't know yet. But eventually, we're going to see some subtle shifts, some major shifts. And I think that really, you look at the amount of change that happened business-wise, creatively, yada, yada, you know, in 2011. We're poised for the next couple of years having that become potentially the norm or a lot more happen with some radical innovations, getting away from maybe the pan and scan approach to digital comics to something else, something better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that'll really prove to be a very additive audience and get more people into the comic stores for print versions of some stuff. So maybe that'll spur trades growth. Maybe it'll cut it down because, well, you can just get it digitally.
Mm-hmm.
It's really anyone's guess at this point. Again, 2011 was very interesting to look at the sales over the years, or over the months and stuff during the year and stuff. And Particularly looking at like that chart on how it looks like the interest in the Marvel and DC superhero trades is cooled off, you know. So it's always fun to kind of take a step back, look at the bigger picture, that flood of data, and just see what kind of pops out.
Yeah.
So anything else?
No, I think we're good. You're pretty satisfied with the year overall too then?
Yeah, pretty much. I need to, you know, look a little more at the comic stuff. Bob and I are going to be recording on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, 2012 starts off in January much stronger than it did in 2011. And we continue to see some of the upward growth that we've been seeing. I do think, although it's very hard to tell this on the trade side, that some of that is aggregate growth, not growth within titles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'm sure Bob and I will talk about when we go over the numbers on the comic side is how the month-to-month may trend upwards, but the titles all trend downwards, and it's just the replacement of titles that do it with because I've got a chart on the comic side of advances versus declines, which is pretty interesting, but very misleading, because with the whole new 52... You've got an entire month where there were no advances and declines for DC, for the superhero line. It's a new baseline.
You wrote about that in your article, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's always a lot more obvious on some of the trends and stuff on the comic side, whereas on the trades, they keep renaming, renumbering, and are so inconsistent between,
Right.
I can't sequence the trades the way I can sequence the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do the advances declines as easily. And if I can figure out a way to do that, I will. But that's one where just the way they package the material, the way they name the material, makes this a lot more challenging and, you know, in some ways more fun.
Well, you may be spinning your wheels. What you really need is help from the publishers just to get it right. You know?
Yeah. Totally. It'd be a huge help if they would just stop saying, well, you know, every time a new writer gets on, it's Daredevil Volume 1.
Yeah.
Or Captain America Volume 1, because they keep renumbering it. You know, it's... I really think that's a bad trend.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if that continues going forward in 2012. I think to a degree it will.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's almost inevitable. So that pretty much do it then?
That'll do it, man.
Awesome. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look.
Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.